the day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Love that intro more every time I hear it. Those of you that have been wondering over the last few years what that intro is from, it's actually from Rick Wakeman, the organist of the band called Yes, which was one of my favorite bands growing up. Greetings. We are the Guardians of the Holy Grail program. And we are dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the Holy Grail, the secret societies, and many of the world's occult and esoteric mysteries. My name is Mark Amaru Pinkham. I'm a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars. At our website, which is www.gnostictemplar.org, you can sign our mailing list and receive our monthly e-newsletter, which is very informative. You can also become an associate member of our organization, and if you want, you can even become a full member. All you have to do is download an application. You can get there right on the website, fill it out, and send it back to us. You're also going to find a lot of books and videos and correspondence courses and all kinds of really good stuff there. So once again, it's www.gnostictemplars.org. Now, during today's show, if you have questions, which I would be amazed if you didn't, you can call in on our toll-free number, which is 888-627-6008. Now, before we begin today's show, I'd like to inform all of you listening about an event that our Gnostic Temple organization is sponsoring this December. It's called Birthing the Fifth World. As many of you know, the Fifth World is the name for the new era that we're moving into on at December 21st, 2012. This is a name for it that the Native Americans are using, especially the Hopis, which are right up the road from us here in Sedona, Arizona. And each world is 26,000 years in length. So essentially, what we're actually ending a 104,000-year cycle and beginning a new 26,000-year cycle this December. During the Birthing the Fifth World event, which is going to take place over 3 days here right in the Red Rocks and Vortexes of Sedona, Arizona, we're going to have a number of speakers making presentations about the coming Fifth World, what it means, the new spirituality, the new civilization. And we're also going to have a lot of purification rites to help prepare for the new era. We're planning some sweat lodges, some dances, a Vedic fire ceremony, which is very powerful and very purifying. In fact, it was used in ancient times to purify the entire world. On the special day of December 21st, at dawn, we're going to station ourselves at the vortexes around Sedona and make ourselves available to receive the new frequencies as they enter the Earth from the outer cosmos. Then we're going to gather together as one tribe of all nations, or what I'm also calling Earth Tribe. Now, we have a website we've been working on, and we'll be updating about this event. It's www.2012sedona.com, And if you go there and you sign our mailing list, we'll let you know when we have further updates about it. Soon we want to get a full schedule and the price of the event and so forth and so on. At this point, we do have some Native American elders that are scheduled to be part of this event, some Hopis. And we also have elders of the Yazidi tribe, or Yazidi people from Iraq who claim to be the first people ever created on Earth. So it's going to be, in a lot of ways, the first event of its kind in North America that I know of. In fact, we're even going to start the most ancient order of the Peacock Angel, which I know there's a lot of you are going to want to be part of. And within that organization, we are going to learn some of the most ancient and secret of the Yazidi teachings. So, go to the website, 2012sedona.com, and take a look at what we've got there. And I'm hoping that I'm going to see a lot of you at the event coming this December 21st. And, I mean, if you do want to be outside, you're probably not going to want to spend December 21st in Wisconsin or Maine, or probably any place more north than where we are here in Sedona, Arizona. But the weather here is always beautiful, so you can count on it being a good day here. So today we're going to be discussing some 100,000-year-old temples and a new theory of Earth's history that actually led to their discovery. Our guest today is Jan Peter de Jong from Holland. Jan lived in Peru for 17 years while working with Jesus Gamarro and studying the theory of Jesus' late father, Alfredo Gamarro. Together, Jan and Jesus have further proven the theory of Alfredo Gamarro, which states that the temples in Peru are built on the foundation of older ones that were built as possibly as early as 100,000 years ago. During this time period of 100,000 years or so ago, which Alfredo Gamarro calls the Hunan Pacha, actually many temples around the world in other countries were also constructed at that time. And so we're going to learn more about these different time periods and the Hunan Pacha, the earliest time period when some of the Earth's temples were built. As we speak to Jan Peter, if you want to go to Jan's website and learn more about him and his work, please do. It's ancient-mysteries-explained.com. Okay. So greetings, Jan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. I want to thank you for the invitation, and welcome to all the listeners. And I hope we have a good show and some good talks about those mysteries we will talk about.
Well, it's up to us to make it a good one, so let's go.
Yes.
Make it a good one. Well, I'll ask you right away. So what is it that originally took you to Peru that started your journey with the Gamarras and your research into Earth's history?
Well, the first time I went to South America was for my studies. I studied agronomy. And as you might know, Peru is the country where the potato is based and where it comes from. So I went first the first time for practice for my studies. And later I went back and I lived there for a longer time. So the first time was more on the agronomy. And later, well, I met Jesus Gamarro and got involved in the theories and investigations of his father. And we also agreed to do a documentary that's called The Cosmogony of the Three Worlds. And we have been filming, and Jesus took me around all the important vestiges and also a lot of unknown vestiges that even to the local people sometimes are not very well known, but very impressive and also very strange. They are like strange stones in the middle of nowhere, but obviously they have been touched by people. What Alfredo said, that it has been a long time ago that those vestiges were made.
Why don't you tell us now about the theory of Alfredo Gamarra and how he arrived at his theory?
Well, Alfredo, he has been investigating. Well, Alfredo, he died like I think in the early 2000s, and he has been studying his whole life, and he had also like dreams where he got messages, and then when he started to investigate, and while investigating, he also studied Quechua, the local language, the native language of the Peruvian people, and he got a lot of similarities between the legends of the Quechua people and what he found in the vestiges and what he got indicated in his dreams. And he got to some very interesting conclusions that go a bit against the normal way of thinking, that all that we find near Cusco is from the Incas. But he found out that a lot of things are the other way around. So what is considered Inca is only a small part of all those vestiges. It's only the parts that in this these times we could make also the small stones with hammer and chisel. We could make them the same way, but the other vestiges that, or the other style, I would say, the other style that is below those walls of the Incas, they are much different. They are very perfect. They're perfectly fitting stones in big walls. They can be very big stones. And also there is another style, a first style that, as you were saying, is the oldest style. And that is a style that is in the same rock, in the same mountain. And that is what we call the Hanan Pacha style. And it's a very interesting part of the theory that this Hanan Pacha style is the reason of the other styles building around it, and it's the reason that they felt that they should protect this style as if it was sacred. And many times you still see that in Peru, that they are like worshipping those stones still, and they make offerings in those places. And I think you have been to Peru, so you might know that they still do that.
Well, and, yes, I've been there a number of times. And, of course, when I saw the vestiges of Hanan Pacha, you know, my idea was that not the Incas, but the pre-Incas just took a rock and carved into it. But according to what Alfredo Gamarra has decided himself, is that those rocks weren't carved, they were molded, right? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, well, the theory says the following, that those stones were made in a time much different than our time. In the first period of human life, so like in the genesis of the human history, and in those times the earth would have been smaller and would have been with less gravity, which means that all kinds of materials would have been less dense, with the stones being like moldable, something like clay. We could compare it with clay, and they could do things in the rock that we can't do now, because the rock is very hard, and we couldn't do that right now. So what they did is with molds, making structures in those rocks, and then with some technology, with heat, they fixed it like some type of ceramics, as we could do now also with clay, only on a very small scale. They could do things in the rock on a very big scale, and with the technology that we don't understand right now, because we can't repeat it in the same way. And that's the reason that many times when people see these rocks and all other investigators, they came to the conclusion that it must have been made with lasers, or it must have been the aliens that did these things in the rocks. And different theories theorizing about what they can see there. But what for me was important is that Alfredo came with the theory that makes sense, because he is the only one that explains how things could have happened in the past.
Well, what would have made there less gravity on the planet, and what would have made the rocks more pliable, more malleable?
Yeah. Well, the theory says that we have been in other orbits around the sun, and every time there is a change of orbit, the planet goes further away from the sun, and during that process is also gaining in mass. So the Earth is growing bigger, and with the consequence that gravity will be bigger also, which means that for us people, we had to suffer a bit more during the last orbits, because we couldn't grow that big. And it's also interesting to conclude that our lifespans are also smaller because of more gravity. And in this way, it's interesting that you can see, for example, in the Bible, that at the begin time, during the time of paradise on Earth, our lifespan would be almost eternal, like they say in the Bible. And after that, when we went to another orbit, it was the time that we had to leave paradise, when we got thrown out of paradise, and then our lifespans would have been like a few hundred years, or even more than 1,000 years. And after that, it was only like in our times, 120 years maximum. So that is why, that's one of the reasons that Alfredo divided our time of human history in three parts. And another reason is the three different styles that we can find in those vestiges. And always that first time of Hanampaccia, always that being sacred, because the other two periods, they built their walls around or above this style, this first style, and that way you can see that it is important, that it was sacred, and it should have been protected. But that's very clear, and I haven't seen any other explanation like this. If you see the Orthodox explanations, they could do a lot of things in stones, but they don't explain why they built walls around the rock. There's no logic in it, you know?
So what I'm understanding you say, Dan, is that that the Earth was closer to the sun. It had a revolution around the sun of only 225 days, right?
Which would have made
the Earth a lot hotter, right? Just like it does Venus today, which is 225 days.
That's correct, yes. We would have been in the orbit where now is Venus. That would mean that Venus in those times was closer to the sun. And after that, there would have been an orbit of 260 days, which is exactly the cycle that indicates the Chalkin calendar of the Mayas. And, well, after that, the 365 days in which we are now. So those three times he defined. So we have the comparison with the lifespans of people, we have the comparison with the different styles, and we have the comparison also with the different calendars.
Well, the one thing that I wonder is, of course, scientists today say there's no way that life could survive on Venus, because it's, you know, it is so close to the sun, and the environment was so hot.
Yeah, that's correct.
So wouldn't it have been pretty difficult for humans to survive on Earth if Earth was as close as Venus is today?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, Mark, and very logic. And I always have been asking this to Jesus Camaro also. And one of the answers I found is that, in the first place, Venus has a very different composition of chemical components, and that is why it has like a very hot temperature in its atmosphere. And the other thing is that also the sun is growing. When the Earth grows, the sun is also growing. It's like a universal law that planets and stars grow. They have been finding that the whole universe is expanding. So within this mechanism, it fits, you know. So when the Earth was closer to the sun would have been smaller, so it would have been less hot.
Well, Alfredo Gomara, he based his theory on, as you said, some of the old legends of the Incas or the pre-Inca people. What legend specifically was he influenced by?
Well, the Hanampacha and the Urampacha and the Ukonpacha, the three times that he defines, they were like considered as the spiritual worlds of the Incas. And so the Hanampacha would have been like heaven for them, and the Urampacha would have been one level lower, and then our times something considered as maybe hell or difficult place, something like that. That would have been right now, and it weren't spiritual worlds, it were real worlds, and that is his conclusion, that a lot of things that we hear from legends and the myths of the Incas and all over the world, they were real worlds, and I think that is very interesting, and a conclusion that nobody has made. But if you start to think in this way, you start to think to see things in a different way, and that's a very interesting part of this theory, apart from that it explains a lot. And I've been looking a bit further into it, of course, out of curiosity. And I found a few theories that also say the same, that the Earth was smaller in the past. There is a theory called the expanding Earth, or growing Earth is what they call it right now. And it says the same. And if you see, for example, a website from a guy like Neil Adams, neiladams.com, he is a cartoon, maker.
Cartoonist?
I think he does Batman or something like that. But he also has seen, you know, the artists have very good eyes. They see sometimes things that scientists don't see, because scientists I used to see only the smaller parts a lot of time, and they go into a lot of detail. But I have found that artists have very good eye for things. And he saw that the Earth, when it was smaller, the continents were fitting a lot better. When you make the Earth smaller and you take away the oceans, the continents start to fit perfectly. And there is a theory called the continental drift, and it's based on the fact that Africa and South America, they seem like to fit more or less. But if you do that, you try to fit them on the Earth with the dimensions it has now, it doesn't fit perfectly. Mm-hmm. And you do the projection of making the Earth smaller, then it starts to fit perfectly. So this wouldn't be a coincidence. And for me, it's like a proof that what Alfredo said is true. The Earth was smaller in the past.
Well, the one thing I have right there, John, my scientific mind is working a little bit, that if the planet's smaller, wouldn't the gravitational field be stronger? Is what I'm thinking.
If the Earth is smaller, the gravitational field it depends on the mass. If it's with the same density of mass, because a small Earth would have less mass also, then it would mean that gravity is a lot smaller. It's like going to the moon, you know, the moon is a lot smaller and you have a lot You have less gravity on the moon.
Well, I guess that would be contingent upon the Earth having less mass, then, wouldn't it? Yeah.
If you would make the Earth smaller with the same mass, then the gravity would be more, as you say. But you have also to make the mass less in this case.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me again, John, where Alfredo got the dates for these different worlds. I think you said he got it from the Bible, or is that where he got it from?
Yeah, well, he made some calculations with the ages mentioned in the Bible, and what is normally done is that the data we have of the people with very long lifespans, they try to fit it in our lifespan, so they make it smaller, but he didn't do that. So based on that and also with some Egyptian data of long-living pharaohs and people from Egypt and also based on the ice ages, he related it also to the ice ages and then he came to this conclusion that more or less the first time period would have been from 100,000 years ago to like 70 or 60,000 years ago, and then the second period would have been till 30 or 20,000 years ago, and after that it was our present period of 365 days. That is more or less his estimation, and I know from Jesus Camara that in his latest book he has another indication which is based on some calculations he did on stones in Cusco, but this detail I don't know exactly, and he promised to tell me, but as you know, I'm not right now in Cusco. I'm living in Holland, and I'm trying to coordinate with Jesus again to get some more productions with books and films, and we will meet each other on the Pythagoras conference, where you will be also, I understood, so that will be great to see us together there, and
obviously that's going to be the place to be, right? You and I are going to be there, Antoine Jigal, with her exciting Egypt research. My wife Andrew is going to be there. So it's going to be a amazing thing. I guess that's in October, and if those of you that are listening that want to know more about the other speakers and want to register, you can go to this website, which is www.pythagorasconferenceglobal.com. And Jesus and yourself are both going to be there, so that's going to be exciting.
Yeah, it will be great. Also good to mention is that we will have a journey with Jigal next May in Egypt, and we still have some open places, so if people are interested, one of the reasons to go there is that it will be very interesting to compare the different things that I know from Peru with what we have in Egypt. And, of course, I already know because I've been meeting with Jigal in France, and we've been talking a lot about the documentary I made and what she have seen in Egypt. There are a lot of similarities. The three styles, for example, you can also find in Egypt. And the Hanan Pacha style, interesting to mention, is that first style is to be found below the Great Pyramid, for example. And that is in the underground chamber. So we have this style made in the rock on which the Great Pyramid is built. And for Orthodox investigators, it's like an unfinished chamber, but it's not. It's a style made in the same rock, mm-hmm. exactly as we can see in Peru.
Pyramids or temples above ground that have that Hanan Pacha style?
Yeah, well, the Great Pyramid is built above this chamber, and there are other pyramids that have similar constructions below it, and there are more Hanan Pacha places in Egypt, what I've been seeing on pictures. But to be honest, I've never been in Egypt, so I'm not an Egypt expert. But, you know, the internet is a great thing right now. You can do a lot of comparisons. And mm-hmm. it's not only in Egypt. It's also, for example, in Japan, where we have the underwater vestiges of Yonaguni. And they are exactly, well, exactly, I can say that because I've been in Sacsayhuaman, and what I see on the pictures, it looks like a Sacsayhuaman.
Mm-hmm. And, there are some similarities, for sure.
Yeah. Something interesting also that what I mentioned about artists having a good eye for this, when I gave a lecture about this in Holland, there was an artist seeing the documentary, and he later went to Greece, Athens, and then he wrote me a mail, and he said, I made some pictures of what you call the Hanan Pacha style, and he sent me the pictures, and it's exactly like Hanan Pacha, and on that mountain in Greece, it's there is built the Pantheon of Athens. So mm-hmm. that's also built over Hanan Pacha style.
Mm. Well, was it part of Alfredo Gamarra's theory that there was a worldwide culture of builders that existed during Hanan Pacha that were building in different countries?
Yeah. Well, as you know, in during the time of paradise, what he says was the first period, the earth, as he said, was smaller, so it was a more even climate, and they could do these things over the whole world. And what Alfredo mentions is that Hanan Pacha is especially present in Cusco, in Peru, and so he considers Cusco like the cradle of humanity because of the relative very big presence of this building style there.
Interesting. Yeah, I heard some time ago that the name Peru actually, I think it may be in the Quechua language, actually has some meaning like paradise. So there are some people that might agree with you that at least that was a Garden of Eden at the beginning of some cycle of time on Earth.
Yeah, and also, Cusco is considered as the navel of the world.
Mm-hmm. Cusco means the navel, exactly, right. That's very possible, especially considering that's where so many of our vegetables come from, the potato, the corn. I mean, it mm-hmm. definitely, in a lot of ways, was the or a Garden of Eden, and that is the legend of Tiwanaku, you know, that it was created after 5 days and five nights of darkness and destruction, and then Tiwanaku was built as the beginning of the new era, as the Garden of Eden of the present age. So, yeah, there's a lot of beginnings that happened there, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, yes.
And I know that a lot of archaeologists have actually found evidence that humanity, actually Homo sapiens, have been in South America like as much as 5-6 million years ago. So... Yeah. So it is definitely possible.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of the orthodox timescale that might not be completely correct. And there are a lot of reasons to think that those timescales are not correct. And, those million years ago might be a lot less, I think. The other time periods, humanity would have been different, would have been bigger. I think during the Pythagoras conference, there will be a speaker that will be talking about huge human beings, giants.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For example, a man like Klaus Donner, he's also finding a lot of evidence about big humans in the past.
Alfredo
Gamarra says the same. All the time people say, but there is no evidence. There is no evidence. But there is evidence, only it's... It seems to be, I don't know, it seems to be hidden, or it seems to be considered as a hoax or all the time, or it seems to be considered as anomaly.
Right. Well, Klaus Dahn has been on the show a couple times, and last time he said he was headed down to Ecuador because they, in this place called Cemetery of the Giants, they found two human skeletons that both were about 20 feet in length.
20 feet? That's really big, yes.
Yeah.
See, I have to translate it to meters, but that's like 6-7 meters.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if you study the legends of different countries around the world, they don't say that we started as chimps or monkeys or midgets. They say we started as giants. All of them say the same thing.
That's correct, yes. And that, again, explains that's why I called my website Ancient Mysteries Explained. That is why I consider that Alfredo Gomara is one of the few that really explains all these mysteries. And that there is like a structure in it. You can see that with less gravity, all these things could happen. That there could be giant structures, that there could be megalithic vestiges and perfect fitting stones and a thing like vitrification. A very interesting thing I've been doing last year was writing an article about a sample that I got from Peru and I had investigated here in Holland. My idea was to really check with a good analysis to see if it's vitrified or not, because I have a lot of material on pictures and video where it seems to be vitrified because there is a lot of friction, and I've been showing this on the internet and discussing with people, and it must be vitrified. If you see it, it gives you that impression, but of course it's not a complete certainty. If you show it this way, it could be just a reflection, you know. And but it's all the time, and it's everywhere. So my way of thinking is, no, it can't be a coincidence that you see this everywhere. If you feel it with your fingertips, you can feel it's very smooth, and it's also with a different color. And
right. Well, a lot of people speculate that was caused by lasers. Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, you could think that, because with lasers maybe they could be produce some heat to let it vitrify. Only the exact technology is not known, but what you can see is that it must have been with molds, because if you would use lasers, you would have like angles that were perfectly 19 degrees, but they're smooth angles, they're rounded angles. So something different happened. It gives an impression more like our package material, you know, the faux material from where you get your television when you buy it new, and it gives that impression. And those things are made with heat and with pressure, under pressure, and something like that it must have been. They could do these things in stone, not with plastic, but in stone.
And do you think that the environment would have generated that kind of heat to vitrify the rocks? I mean, that's a very, very hot environment.
Yes. It's like 1,000 degrees that under present circumstances you would need. But you could imagine maybe if mass and gravity was less in those times, that... Yeah, physical circumstances were something different, and it's a bit difficult to imagine how they would have done it, but they must have had some technology that was much different and not possible to do it in our circumstances, but on those times it seems to have been possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why that we can't explain it right now. It was another world, you know, and... Mm-hmm. Happily enough, I could prove that this sample is really vitrified. It has a very smooth layer, and in the layer the chemical composition is much different than in the rest of the stone. And it's the first time that it's been investigated, because the orthodox archaeologists, they say, oh well, they have been polishing these stones, and they've done it with a lot of patience. The Incas must have done it, and yeah, their time concept was much different than our time concept, this kind of thinking, you know. And I don't think it was that way. I think it was something that must have been easy for them in those circumstances, in those times.
We can see it,
that it exists.
Jan, have you used any astroarchaeology in order to date some of these temples from the Hanumpacha period? Perhaps they had alignments to certain star positions that maybe were 50,000 or 100,000 years ago.
No, I've not done something like this, no. Normally the Hanumpacha temples are inside the rest of the vestige, and they're like the top of a mountain, as is the case for Machu Picchu. And, you know, you have the solar, the solar temple and at the upper part of Machu Picchu. And, for example, in Pisac, you have also the Intihuatana, and also the same is in Ollantaytambo and in Chinchero, and they're all around like a mountaintop of Hanumpacha.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is in Sacsayhuamán. You have the Colina Suchuna, that is a big rock. It's completely vitrified, where you have the slides. You know that one?
It's a very which site is this in?
Monument.
I think I'm aware of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I've been there.
Yeah, and they built a big wall around it also. It's just pieces of rock with structures in it, and there is no logic what it would be, where it would be for. We can explain it, but it must have been important. That's that's what is obvious, you know, because if not, there wouldn't be walls around it or walls near it.
Well, that's why we thought it might be a good idea to use some of this astroarchaeology, because so much of these vestiges of Hanumpacha are the Intihuatanas that were built to be aligned with the solar and certain star positions.
Yeah, could be, yes. Maybe it's something that we could do and investigate better to see if there is a coincidence.
Well, what is your research right now? How are you proceeding to try to prove this theory more of Alfredo Gamarra?
Well, what we want is to communicate a bit more this to the world with the material we have. And Jesus Gamarra, the son of Alfredo, is still writing books. Well, he says that he has like material for like 14 books, and he is working on that. I agreed with Jesus that we will produce a few documentaries. One is about it's called Aitamananki, and it's a production that goes about Sacsayhuamán, Cusco, being very important in human history, and it's also based on investigations about Quechua and the importance of Quechua in human history. And it says that Cusco would have been Babylon the Great in the past, not the modern Babylon that's in Iraq, but Babylon the Great, and Sacsayhuamán, the Tower of Babel. That's another, well, it seems far out, a conclusion that goes far out, but Alfredo Gamarra also came to the conclusion that really the Americas are not the new continent, but were very important in the past and in ancient times, and also that Atlantis must have been in those continents, and for example also the time of the Tower of Babel was in those parts of the world. And one of the reasons to think so is that, for example, Quechua is considered by investigators as the oldest language or one of the oldest languages in the world. And a lot of languages have relation with Quechua. And that wouldn't be logic if you think that the Americas would be the new world, you know. Right. Well, it's concentrating a bit on this, that, well, Cusco was very important in ancient times, and it was the old world. It was very important in those times, in the first and second period, and also in the third period, of course. And that's what he is concentrating on. For me, well, being right now in Holland, I've been working on those on the vitrification part, what for me was very important, because I, as I said, I had a lot of discussions that were about my images, and I felt the need to really prove that there is something different on the surface of this, and I'm very happy to have been able to prove it. So Orthodox people just saying it's polished, well, I have an argument now to say it's not, and I will also produce a film about that, and that will be called something like Vitrified and Molded Stones, where I have still a lot of material on video, a lot of footage, and we will produce a film about that. And the other one I said was at the Menanki, and well, I will coordinate with Jesus to see what more we will do, and maybe in October we can make more plans for future productions.
Excellent.
The things that Jesus is wanting to do is another production like The Cosmogony of the Three Worlds. I think you know that one, that goes a lot about the three different styles, especially in Cusco. Mm-hmm. To do something similar, but then on world level, to make comparisons between the different parts of the world and to really prove that those styles are the same as we can see in Cusco. Mm-hmm. The ancient monuments.
Right. Well, a lot of great work there, and I'm sure that you're going to produce a lot of great videos and great books out of it. I just have a couple more questions.
Yes.
In the second world, I mean, it seems to be pretty clear that in Hanunpacha that the stones were less dense, and they were more pliable, easy to be molded and shaped. In the world after Hanunpacha, the second world, that's when these big monstrous polygonal blocks were shaped and put into place that we see today. My question is, how do you think that those blocks were cut and shaped? I mean, they're shaped so perfectly, you know, you can't get a credit card between them. Were the rocks still pliable at that time in history, or did they use some other kind of method to cut those rocks with such precision? What's Alfredo's take on that?
Yeah, well, it was something similar, only on a somewhat smaller scale. And not in monolithic, but, well, megalithic, and with pieces of stone. So they had, like, a clay-like material, and they could mold it. That's why, on the moment of construction, that material being soft, they could build them perfectly fitting. And you can see that still. If you see some walls where the upper stones are removed, you can see that the underlying stones have like a print of the upperlying stones in it. You can see that, for example, very good in Pisac or Yantai Tambo. You see that very clear. And you can see, for example, the walls of the Coricancha in the center of Cusco, that they have parts where they fit, they fit perfectly all the time. There is no exception. And, well, I really cannot imagine how they would have done that, the stone being hard, you know. They would have had really so much time or so much precision with metal tools, as is the Orthodox vision. And I really can't imagine that. It's not possible to do that with metal tools, not with that precision. And there are also very small pieces that if you would use metal tools, they would break off. And in the walls of Coricancha, you see that the upper lying stones, they sit on the underlying stones in that way that sometimes a small piece of the underlying stones is pressed between the upper lying stones, between the two upper lying stones, a very small part. And, you know, if you start to see things like that, then you see the logic behind it. And you can see that it could have been that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, through studying the legends and histories of the Incas and pre-Inca people, have you been able to come to any kind of, you know, speculation as to who were the builders of these ancient temples? You know, I think of the most ancient legend I've heard so far, and I mean, it could be dubious. I don't know, but it has to do with Oriones, rather. This woman from Venus who was an extraterrestrial landed on the island of the sun in the middle of Lake Titicaca, and she was the matriarch of many of the Andean peoples. And this was like 6 million years ago. Through your study or through Alfredo's studies, have you been able to like come up with some ideas about who were these builders that were here, you know, 50 to 100,000 years ago?
Well, they were the first people. They were the giants. They were the gods of our legend.
The Viracochas.
They had eternal life, and they were our ancestors. They were not aliens. Well, maybe the first ones came from another planet. Who knows? It's a bit difficult to say where they came from. But the theories of Alfredo, they don't make it necessary that those vestiges had to be made by extraterrestrials. And that's the very interesting thing for me, that you can really make conclusions that go in these directions, that they were giants, they were gods. Also, the thing with the lifespans, you can imagine that with less gravity, one could theoretically live a lot longer.
Right. Well, maybe you can compare notes with Brian Forrester, who's another researcher who's going to be at the Pythagoras conference, and he's doing a lot of research on the elongated skulls that have been found down in Peru. Maybe these are skulls of the ancient builders.
Yeah, that could be. There is the elongated skulls. There are some different kinds of elongated skulls. And Jesus Camara thinks that they were like an adaptation from the former orbit to our present orbit. So in earlier times, in the Uranpatia, no, the orbit before this one, the period before this one, they formed like these skulls. And my way of thinking is that if a baby is born, it's the latest part of our body that becomes hard. You know, the part of the baby on the head, the top of the head. And in earlier times, because of less gravity, it stayed a longer time soft, and it could grow more. It's I don't know if you follow me, but if people go to space, their bones become weak. They become like cartilage. And in earlier times, bones would have been softer also a longer time before becoming hard, because of less gravity. That's a way of reasoning. So people could be bigger, and their heads could be longer. So there could be really a relation with earlier times and those elongated skulls.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I know Brian is doing some investigation on this with Lloyd Pye, and I think he's still waiting for some results from analysis in the laboratory. But I'm very curious about these investigations to see what happens with this. And they're speculating about aliens or another kind of people, and there's still a lot of questions about it, but in the line of reasonings of Alfredo Camara, this could be fitting into a former period.
Definitely, yeah. Well, there's no question that they were giants down in Peru and South America. There's lots of legends of it, a lot of legends of people with elongated skulls. I mean, there's no question that sooner or later, you know, your theory could, you could get all the pieces of the puzzle and really have a nice, coherent theory for yourself. It sounds like you could be right on the threshold of something pretty important. And I envy your work as a researcher. I love that kind of work. I also commend you for it, because we need more researchers like yourself in order to delve into the past and really reveal what the past of humanity. And I think now is the time. Now is the time. So much of the evidence is available that wasn't before. And so it's exciting times. And I'm glad that researchers like ourselves can connect up, because what I find is, you know, we all have a piece of the puzzle. And if we put our pieces together, we've got quite a nice mosaic together, you know. So thank you for sharing your piece of the puzzle. And once again, I wanted to mention that, you will be, along with myself, at the Pythagoras Conference in October, along with Jesus Gamarra and Antoine Jagal and my wife. People that want to know more about it and register for that conference can go to www.pythagorasconferenceglobal.com. And also in May, Antoine Jagal, yourself, John, and my wife we're going to be leading a tour into Egypt. And there's still some room on that tour if you're interested. And if you are, please go to www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. That certainly sounds like that's going to be a magical event and a life changer for a lot of people. Gee, thanks so much for being on, John. I really look forward to meeting you in October. I think we're going to have some interesting conversations, and there's going to be some amazing presentations at that time. So really looking forward to that. And good luck with your research and your future videos and books that come out of it. I'm sure they'll be very well received.
Okay, Mark, I thank you very much for this interview, and it was great talking to you. And, well, to all the listeners also, I would like to invite them to the different events and also to have a look to our websites that you have been mentioning, and, well, to open their mind to other possibilities of what could have happened in the past. And once one starts to think and see things in another way, a lot of things could make sense.
Exactly.
That is what happened with me. And, well, thanks a lot, Mark. It was great to meet you, and
Likewise, I hope
to meet you live this year.
Yeah.
In Pythagoras Conference in EGO County, also, I heard.
Yes. Well, good luck with everything, John. And again, okay. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Great.
Well, you take care now, my friend.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
And those of you that didn't hear at the start of the show, we mentioned John's website, which is www.ancient-mysteries-explained.com. So I know you're all going to want to visit that website right away in order to learn more about this amazing theory of Alfredo Gamarra. And the rest of you, I'll be back again soon. I can't say exactly when, but one thing's for sure, I'm going to have an amazing guest like I did today with John, and an amazing researcher. Maybe it'll be another speaker, a researcher that'll be at the Pythagoras Conference. That's a strong possibility. And once again, I wanted to mention we have a gathering here in Sedona, 2012 gathering, December 21st. It's a 3-day gathering. There'll be all kinds of speakers and purification rites that will be involved in here to prepare for the coming Fifth World that starts December 21st, 2012. So this is a very exciting time. And if you'd like to know more about that event, go to www.2012sedona.com. And we're going to be updating that very soon with a complete schedule of speakers and events, as well as the registration price and so forth and so on. In the meantime, you can go there, see what's there, and sign our mailing list, and we'll get back to you as soon as we have updated the website. So thank you all for being here again, as always, and continue in your search for the Holy Grail. Those of you that haven't found it, and those of you that are still looking, you might want to turn your gaze inward into your heart, because that's where you're going to find it, right inside yourself, right inside your own heart. Okay, well, bye for now, everyone.